Today's episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Today we're talking with Norfolk Charcoal, a local sustainable charcoal company, about how charcoal is made, the differences about species. It's a really, really sciencey, interesting and fact-finding episode. So without much further ado, here's the Norfolk Charcoal team.
Hello to our guests this evening on the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself to all of our listeners out there?
Yeah. Hello, I'm Arabella Gingell.
And I'm Father Matthew Gingell.
And together you guys are?
We are Norfolk Charcoal.
So Owen and I are so excited to speak to you guys. We've mentioned on a few of the previous episodes in this series that we really wanted to talk to a company about the process of making charcoal, but particularly a sustainable charcoal company, because it's something that I think quite often gets overlooked by barbecuers. And so the first thing I would love to know really is, how did you get into making charcoal?
We got into it right at the start of the pandemic in 2020, and we were looking to buy some charcoal.
I do an awful lot of firewood. I managed forestry, and that's what I've done for a number of years, and produced a lot of firewood and run a mobile sawmill. So the offcuts of the sawmill were going to firewood, and then from there I do quite a lot of nets in various places. And they were all running out of charcoal, and did I know anywhere to get charcoal from? And then researching that a bit, it came to that it was a lot of it, nearly, I don't know, 90,000 tonnes is being imported into the country. And the flagship of what a lot of it is being sold under is it's all imported charcoal. There's not much made here. Mm-hmm. So then I found the Norfolk, the Exeter Charcoal Retorts, and went from there. That's how we got into it.
That's a surprising stat straight away, isn't it? That actually just how much is charcoal is imported.
Mm. I knew nothing about charcoal up till that point. And then trying to find my first thought was I'll make a few quid and find somewhere buying it and I'll be able to sell it on. And then to realise that it is all coming in imported. And that's when we wanted to then start producing our own here.
And so you mentioned, did you say it was an Exeter retort?
An Exeter retort, yeah. Yeah.
What's that?
How did we get to that?
Yeah, how'd you get to it?
Right, how did it get to that? It was the Google looking how to make charcoal, and then various different ways, and the Exeter retort, it cooks on its own, it cooks basically on its own gases, and it is, well, I liked it because it takes 8 to 10 hours to do a burn time, whereas the old-fashioned way of doing charcoal was going to take 3 days, and I didn't like fancy the idea that much. So we went down, or I just sort of made a decision to go and get it, and we went down and had a course and stayed overnight and did an 8-hour burn.
See, the only Exeter retort that I know is Owen, because he spent a lot of time down in Exeter, and so that's what I like to call him. But how big is this thing? How big is it?
It's probably
it weighs a ton and a half.
Wow.
8 foot long?
Yeah, it holds 2 cubic meters of timber in the internal. There's 2 chambers. There's one outside chamber which is used to hold the heat and burn the gases to produce the heat in the internal chamber, which is where you put the wood to make the charcoal. And what I mean, it's phenomenal what comes out of the wood. I mean, I've been I did not know. I mean, producing one batch of charcoal, the gas which is produced out the top of it burns for, what did you say, 4 or 5 hours?
5 hours.
Of a constant roar, like a jet engine, of the gases being extracted out of the timber. That's what makes the difference between good charcoal and bad charcoal. is to actually be left with pure carbon, and the gases and various other things extracted completely out of the wood. It's amazing that it burns for that long and how much gas goes out of it.
So the gas is extracted.
Toxic.
I was going to say, so that's taken out of the wood, and then that's the bit that's burnt during that 10-hour burn. Is that what 8 to 10 hour burn you were saying?
Yeah. When the wood gets hot enough at the bottom, we use waste wood from building sites to heat up the wood in the middle. And then once that gets hot enough, the gas starts coming out of the timber in the middle, and it's diverted back down in tubes, and it's lit at the bottom, so it just keeps circling round and it runs itself for 8 hours.
I love the fact that everything that you're doing is using waste from somewhere, whether it's the own offcuts like you're saying from the sawmill, whether it be the wastage in things from building. How did you start even sourcing the wastage wood in the first place? Was it someone you knew, or was it hard to get hold of?
A lot of the offcuts off the milling softwood. The softwood's never got much of a value, but it's clean timber, and no one likes it as firewood. So we use a lot of that to get it up to temperature.
How hot does it burn when it's doing that burn?
Figures.
Well, it gets up to 460 off a thermometer that's sitting on the top of the retort. Mm-hmm. But right in the centre of the retort gets to over 600 degrees.
Yes.
So just a bit hot then.
Yeah. And when we fill it, it's absolutely rammed full. We were getting every last splinter in there, because obviously the more we get in, the more efficient the burn is. But by the time you've taken all the impurities out of the timber itself, it shrinks by probably a third, nearly.
Almost half.
Yeah, nearly half.
Wow.
And woods react so differently.
And do you find that you mentioned about using softwoods a moment ago? Do you use different types of wood, or is it exclusively softwood? And also, do you notice the behavioural differences between the woods when you're putting them through to make charcoal?
We don't. We only make the charcoal. It's only made out of hardwood.
Hardwood.
So we'll use the softwood as a waste wood, but the hardwoods in the retorts, they vary significantly. Yeah, how much they hold together. Some of you guys like big chunks, and others like a smaller stuff to get there, but they all vary a hell of a lot. Yeah. So what do you prefer when you're cooking? Do you like the big lumps or an even?
Me personally, I actually think I prefer a smaller lump. I was just saying to you before we officially kicked off the podcast that I had a bit of trouble, and that was using some really big lumps today. I think I'm more comfortable with a smaller lump.
Yeah.
Oak tends to go like that. It's really, really flaky. Oak is, because all of the rings inside the wood disappear, which makes it really flaky and it doesn't hold together, but it burns really hot.
Yeah. The smaller stuff, you've got more oxygen around it, so it needs oxygen to burn.
Yeah. And I suppose you find with most smaller charcoal in the at the bottom of the bag, it's almost sort of dust, isn't it? I suppose that's like you were saying with oak, where it starts to break down and become flaky.
The only complaint I've ever had is that there's been too much dust at the bottom of a bag, so we try and take that out. And ideally, it's another product which we can use, you know, biochar and such like. It can be used elsewhere. But it's to try and get a uniform size. Some different species actually stay together and hold together, but it burns brilliantly. So they all vary. They all do really vary, and the amount of gas in them.
And do you know what? On that point, someone who works in the gardening industry, if people don't understand what biochar is, it's just another way that you can make this even more sustainable. As biochar is a fantastic ingredient to add to soil for growing and things as well. I know a number of companies that actually run in that regard, kind of using biochar and going into how it kind of replaces a lot of the carbon that's been kind of, what's the word, like in putting more into the soil and making it more nutrient heavy. So again, it's just another way that it's sustainable and giving back.
Yeah, because you're directly taking pure carbon and putting it into the ground. Mm-hmm. And then once it's in the ground, it's basically there for thousands and thousands of years, permanently under. And it really helps your garden. I have a garden at home, and I did a kind of test last year where I put biochar on some of my sweet corn and left it off. And the sweet corn that had the biochar on probably grew about a foot higher.
Wow. And
the leaves were much, much darker. It makes a huge difference.
And like the science behind this is all fascinating, but if you went into it without any of the prior knowledge when you first started this, I'm guessing there was quite a steep learning curve. What did you kind of go through in that regard?
Well, blimey, how heavy the retort was when we picked it up. The trailer not being man enough to drag it home from Exeter at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was and lighter when you open and shut the retort. So it's an 8-10 hour burn. And to try and turn it around the next day, you obviously open it and then start bagging it up. But if you open it too soon, oxygen can get in, and there's still a bit of even a sparkle of light in there. Anyway, so we've lost three loads, three times the retorts caught fire and gone. So like your barbecue holding a little amount, when one of those goes with 2 cubic meters of charcoal in it, I'm just sitting there thinking this thing's going to melt to nothing. But, yeah.
Wow.
When you open it too soon and there's a bit of a glow in the middle, you can hear it just crackling as you open it, and it's terrifying. You either have to pull all of it out and try and separate what's burning and what's not, or you do the bolts up as quick as you can to try and stop the oxygen from getting in.
You don't get any like backdraft coming out towards you, do you?
Oh no, if it's going, it's really hot. Melt anything, melt steel.
Yeah. Wow.
And obviously you've mentioned that you've been doing it since the beginning of lockdown, so a couple of years now since you guys started. How would you compare your first burn to perhaps the last burn you've just done? Is there a considerable difference in the quality?
The quality, no, but my nerves, yeah. I mean, when you're just sitting there looking, thinking how much it cost, and Christ, it just could melt it all in once. She's so laid back, doesn't worry about it. But I'm the opposite, man. It did, I'm very twitchy. I keep wanting to shut it down or open it up.
Because it runs off itself and runs off its own gases, you have to really monitor the temperature within 20 degrees. And if it gets hotter, more gas is produced out of the wood and more gas is burned, and it just gets hotter and hotter and hotter. So you have to let some of that excess gas off. And sometimes too much gas is produced off something like beech, which is particularly gassy wood, and it can get too hot, which is a bit panicky.
Once it starts going up, if you're not there, it will just keep going. It will just melt itself. Yeah. Wow.
Which people have done.
Which I have done, yeah.
Which we've heard from you.
And it's not insurable, obviously.
Yeah. That's mad. I was going to say, this might sound like a silly question, but can you overdo charcoal? Can you almost take it too far?
No, I shouldn't think you can. No.
Because it's a
retort. I suppose you wouldn't want to try.
Once it's out of gas, it's out of gas.
Yeah, so it does just keep that cycle will take as long as it takes to get everything out of it. That's where our British charcoal or charcoal produced out of a retort would be completely different to anything else made in any other way, because it you can't stop the process until everything is extracted. If it's being done under any other way, you can stop the process while it's being done, which then gives you a slightly heavier charcoal, but still has got the impurities in it,
which obviously then affects the burn actually at the barbecue then, doesn't it, if it's got those impurities in.
It'll be slightly more difficult to light, and it'll burn with
flame.
It will burn. Sometimes it'll burn with a flame, and you can see it. Whether you'd hope that our charcoal, once you actually light it, you can hardly see whether it's lit or not. Only the heat coming off it, because it's.
And on what sort of burn time do you normally get from your charcoal?
Varies, I think. I think it varies in species, different species.
Something like beech, which comes in big lumps. We've had barbecues before. Obviously, we're not professionals. It's cooking sausages for lunch. But we've cooked it, and about 3 hours later, we've gone back to the barbecue, and you could still cook on it, or it's still warm. It goes for hours.
I think a lot of your barbecues, these flashy barbecues now, you can sort of cook anything on a nugget of charcoal. Am I right?
Yeah.
So, well, one of the ones I've got a Weber Smoky Mountain, and I chose to go for the biggest one, which it does drink charcoal. I mean, it does last. You know, I can get a machine. It looks essentially like a big Dalek, but
I'd never realized that there is such a following of people cooking on, and whether this is a new thing or but the amount of people that are really into it, you know, really into it, and cooking some amazing stuff. And then, I mean, you always just sort of think it's a barbie and, you know, lights it, chucks it, and away you go, but no, a lot of people doing it.
I think it's more, it almost feels like a bit more like a movement now in and I think COVID, obviously, you know, with people at home, it's definitely kind of sped that up, but we're still not where American barbecue or Australian barbecue or even perhaps Argentinian barbecue is, but I think we're starting to dispel the kind of myth of, you know, burnt sausages, pink, you know, black on the outside, pink on the inside. We're certainly, you know, starting to hold our own in terms of how we barbecue now, which is great. But again, we need the right tools. You need to obviously have a good barbecue. You need to have good quality meat, and of course, good quality charcoal.
I think where we got our retorts from, they've now sold, or their sales have been really going up, so that the people are, I think, a lot more aware now of what good charcoal is and what bad charcoal is. I never thought there was, I never knew there was a difference in it up till 3 years ago. And now there is a phenomenal difference.
So I went on holiday last year. I went back down to Devon. I'm from Devon, but I took the family down.
Yeah.
And we were in mid Devon, and I had to go, we did some glamping, and they had a little barbecue. And I went to the local corner shop and bought some barbecue, some briquettes, because that's all they had. And I thought, cool, these feel a bit soft, but hey-ho. Got them back, cut them open, and they were white. I don't know what was on them, but it almost turned them mouldy.
Yeah.
This mouldy charcoal, it was absolutely terrible. But I can't even remember what the brand is. It was cheap. It was all they had, and that was the only place for miles. But just the quality of the charcoal was just terrible.
And it goes into your food as well. It makes your food taste different.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I'd love to know is, because you guys are making quite a bit of charcoal and you talked about using different woods and things, do you actually kind of grade your charcoal as it comes out, and do you put like some bits from one burn in like one set of bags, another bits in another? Because you see sort of like restaurant grade lump wood and kind of different types. Is it something you grade? Is it how it's done? How does all that work?
If you're grading it, if there's a difference, you've got a problem, because everything which comes out of there should be as high, well, pure carbon. So no is the answer. And if you say that if you can, you want to cook under apple wood because you want to get a scent of apple wood in it, then it's not proper charcoal. No. It's not produced, but the gases which are giving you your flavor are toxic, and it's not pure carbon.
That's interesting. That's a nice fact. I like that. So if people are buying certain charcoal because they feel like the charcoal itself is giving a different flavour.
Yeah, they're getting mugged.
I like that.
Like some UK companies buying over citrus wood from Spain or wherever, and it doesn't make a difference to how it tastes. The charcoal itself might have a different structure, but probably not different enough to warrant shipping it over from abroad.
The burn times will vary, but not carbon is carbon, and it's the density of it. So a slow-growing wood timber in a hazel or something like that is dense, so it's going to be more carbon compact in that certain area. So you're going to get a longer burn off a smaller piece of wood, whereas your faster-growing chestnuts will burn quicker, but they will give a really even, quick burn. They do really vary.
But it's interesting,
not,
like
not
you said.
Flavor-wise, not flavor-wise.
That's a complete myth. Yeah. Carbon's carbon.
There we are. If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area, with styles and options to suit every budget. And you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk. You've heard it here first. So what's kind of next for you guys as a business? You know, what are your hopes? You've obviously just mentioned that the barbecue movement is getting bigger. Are you hoping to kind of get yourselves out there, become more known?
Wherever we've been with it and dropped a bag off and said, oh, do you want to try it? You know, a lot of farm shops are on the Norfolk coast. Wherever we go, it's wanted. It's taking it up it's the level we're at the moment. The next stage up is quite big, and it would be running a lot more machines. Obviously, dealing direct with the customer is where we'd like to go. Postage is it's expensive. But then it gets our charcoal out to the people who actually do want to do what I would say proper barbecuing or professional, you know, just people who know the difference, rather than it being at the farm shop, they're on holiday and they just want a bit of charcoal. And then that doesn't really float my boat as much as someone saying, oh, how different it is or how good it is. So that's the side of the business we'd like to grow.
And I noticed something on your website. Don't you do like a taste a day to actually come and learn how to do charcoal?
We did it
last year. It was quite fun. We had probably about 7-ish people come over, and
each time
we did the burn itself, and we also had the other retort being unloaded and bagged up and then reloaded, so it would give people the experience of how to make charcoal
and seeing the end result. So it's, To be honest, it was time. And but if anyone were, if any of your listeners want to come and have a day and see what we do and see the timber going in, that's what I find it quite interesting. If I know that I've got a bit of oak in one corner or a bit of something else, and then to see that and see that come out. Willow, you know, artists have asked us, can you do a willow stick? And you put that in. When that comes out, it holds together like a pencil. They're all so, so different as they are when they grow, you know. Well, to me, they are anyway. You look at different trees and they all look completely different.
And are you planning another one for this year? I mean, I'd like to come. I know, I think probably me and Dan would definitely like to come. Maybe some of our listeners, but I obviously, hence why we wanted to get you on the podcast, because we're quite interested in that process. Are you planning to do another one this year?
We haven't really thought about it, but
we hadn't planned, but we'd be
if there was open an interest. If there was an interest, and you guys thought that, and if there was people who wanted to come, we'd do it. Yeah,
I think there'd be a big interest, particularly kind of with people hearing more about you and maybe seeing you a bit more in the community. People are very interested in charcoal, and people spend a lot of time trying to find what they call the right charcoal for them. But the opportunity to actually see it be made properly, I think a lot of people would bite your arm off to come and have a look.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
When we first went over and bought the retort down in Exeter, and we were just taught how to use the retort. That was really interesting.
Yes.
It's completely new, isn't it? I never had any idea how it was made at all.
Yeah, it is fascinating how it's made.
Yeah, as I said, it's something that we're definitely interested in. And
just the pure heat and the flames the whole thing's glowing at you and roaring at you off timber. That's what fascinates me. It's just what comes out of wood, the amount of gas.
So, yeah, the theatrics of it. That sounds really interesting. And you mentioned about potentially having to get more machines if you wanted to, obviously, you know, look at upscaling. Not that we're looking to do it ourselves, but are they quite easy to get hold of, these retorts? Are there many around, or is it something that's quite a niche specialist thing?
They've made about 50 now. There may be a bit more, 50 or 60 they've made. And they've gone worldwide a lot. Biochar we briefly touched on earlier, but there's been quite a few go to Spain or various places around the world purely for the biochar. And I think they were designed to produce biochar, but the charcoal's taken over. They will be, but would I look to buy any more? I'd like to maximise what we've got. At the moment, we're filling our orders and it's going well. But if we needed to get bigger, we would do. Yeah.
And is it something that you're doing all year round? Are you literally burning that thing all year round?
Question, but we're not. No, at the moment it's it just works in well summer. Well, we try and get a bit of a stock up for going into summer. I think we've got a couple of them, and then through the summer months it's easier. We do it more then.
I'm assuming is your interest down in winter?
Putting dry timber in it makes a difference. If you put wet timber into a charcoal machine, it pulls the moisture is pulled out of it relatively quickly, which then breaks down the wood more. So if you use dry timber, the charcoal is a better quality at the end. So really, you've got to I process as much as I can to keep dry timber going into it. That makes a difference to the quality of the charcoal as well.
And is that one of the reasons perhaps why you don't do it during winter, just keeping it dry? Or
Days are shorter. It's a miserable job outside. It's a job in the summer.
Yeah, that's so, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So outside of the obviously making charcoal, I think you've mentioned that you do some barbecuing. Is that something that you do much of yourselves?
I've got to play it with a straight bat. No, it's not.
Okay.
I'm no chef. I'm not great in the kitchen. I suppose I don't, but would I like to do more? Possibly so, but no, I'm not a great user.
I suppose it's a bit like a busman's holiday for you. If you're making all the charcoal all the time, the last thing you want to do is then burn it again. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can understand that completely. Well, we do this thing on the podcast called the Barbecue Bingo, where we get guests on and we spin a wheel and we ask them to go away and if they get a chance to cook it and have a go. So, you know, we can spin the wheel for you and see what it comes up on. And if you think you want to give it a go, I'd love to see what happens, because it's more fun if you've not done it before, right?
It might be the worst barbecue bingo you've seen, but we can have
it. You haven't seen some of the stuff we've cooked, so.
No, exactly, right? When you're putting it on Instagram, you can pick and choose what people see, right? So hopefully
you see the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can see it.
So there is some like interesting stuff on there, which might be completely out of your comfort zone. Things like beef shin, maybe like even like a sweet pastry dish or oxtail might be a bit different. But is there anything there that you think is quite interesting that you'd quite like to do?
Who's doing? You're doing this, I take it.
Okay. Whiskey looks interesting. Not sure what I'd do with that.
You can use it in any way that you want as part of the recipe. For example, you could make burgers, but put a bit of like whiskey in the actual meat mix as you put it together. You could put it in like a stew and do it on there.
Got that nailed.
From what you were saying, would my signature dish, would that be sausages? From what you were saying,
venison burgers. We had some of those last
week. Nice.
They were good.
That sounds good.
We haven't done anything with venison yet.
No, we haven't. We should really.
Did you make them from scratch?
I have to admit, I wasn't fully responsible for making them. No, they were delicious. I can't remember what he did with them. But
his son, the chef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, if I got whiskey, I would just cook whatever I wanted and just have it at the side and just, you know, as a little tipple, but...
All right, yeah. Well, if we're allowed to do that, that's...
What I'll do is I'll give this a quick spin and let's see what comes up.
Leg of lamb.
Yeah, that'll do. Well, mind you, these pro boys would be doing that. There'd be a regular one for these.
You'd be surprised, because Owen doesn't like lamb, so it would be highly irregular for him.
I've never cooked leg of lamb. Myself.
We'll give you a little demonstration how to do it, yeah?
Yeah, please. I did a lamb shoulder for New Year's Eve and it didn't get eaten, so I don't think it was that good. What's your thoughts on a bit of leg of lamb? Where do you first go to?
We have our own lambs. We normally get a couple of bottle lambs every year and raise them, and it's delicious. I don't know why you don't like it. It's lovely.
I agree wholeheartedly. It's great stuff, lamb.
Yeah.
I really want to, because some of the recipes and some of the cooks I've seen with lamb are just amazing. They look amazing. They smell nice. I just don't like the taste.
Yeah, I love the mint sauce going with it. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I did a butterflied leg of lamb last year. That was phenomenal. So I'd never had it butterflied before. And that was absolutely gorgeous. And I always find doing it on the barbecue just gives lamb an extra dimension. I'm looking forward to seeing how I get on with it. How did I cook it? So I cooked that. I kind of used I've got a Monolith Kamado, one of the big... like ceramic barbecues, so it holds the heat very well. So for that, I ran it at about 160, and I can't remember what internal temperature I took it to, but I just kept checking the internal temperature, and it was on for a few hours, but it was absolutely gorgeous, still pink in the middle, which is what I like. And the flavor on it was amazing, and I cooked so much of it because only myself and my grandmother were eating it. I cooked it for her specifically because, being Welsh, and she came down, I was like, let's do you a Welsh meal, right? But I mean, I thought it was going to stay the leftovers in my freezer for like a few months. I could do different things with it. Gone in a week. I must have done like five different cooks with it in 7 days. It was that good.
Yeah, yeah. What about sourcing your meats? I mean, that must be fairly important as well.
So we both get most of our meat from our butchers.
Yeah.
I've used online butchers before to get hold of cuts and things that I've not been able to get locally. But the butcher I use two different butchers locally. One of them is a 5-minute drive from my house. The other one's a 10-minute drive from my house.
Yeah.
Again, for you, Owen, yours is very close, isn't it, to you?
Yeah. I think as much as possible, I want to support local. I don't like buying my meat from the supermarket unless I absolutely have to.
Just the amount of time it's hung. Surely that makes a massive difference to the tenderness or the cooking of it.
Hugely different. And something that I say to people who just go, oh, you know, getting meat from a butcher's is more difficult. What will blow your mind if you've never done it before is just go and get beef mince from a butcher and try and compare their beef mince to the beef mince that you get in a supermarket. And the flavour, the smell, the colour, the feel is just so different. I think once you've done that, you realise the difference and you don't go back unless you really have to for some reason. If you're caught short in the middle of nowhere or you realise you haven't got what you need for that evening or something. But it's so important to try and source your meat locally where possible. And the flavour difference is amazing. They're experts. They know what they're doing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's being local, all sourcing the stuff local, all of our timber. I mean, I can look out the window and see where the next year's load of charcoal is going to come from. It doesn't move anywhere other, you know, than about less than a mile.
It sounds like Owen and I fantastic. Need to get a farm. We need to get a farm, Owen. That's what we need to do.
Absolutely. So do you want to... obviously, you introduced yourself at the beginning. However, where can our listeners learn more about your company? Obviously, apart from listening to this, where can they go to buy your charcoal? Have you got a website?
We've got a website, yeah. It's www.norfolkcharcoal.com. And we have an Instagram page as well, which is just Norfolk Charcoal. And Facebook as well, which is also Norfolk Charcoal.
Fantastic. Again, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. We really appreciate it. Yes, we'd love, you know, we'll order some charcoal. It'd be great to test it. And thank you so much. Well, thank you very much, guys, for coming on to the show.
Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good one, guys. Cheers.
Bye.
Well, that's another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Thank you so much to Arabella and Matt from the Norfolk Charcoal Company. It's been great speaking to you and learning all about the process of making charcoal. Thank you so much for listening to us. If you're interested in finding more about us and what we're doing, you can Google Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. You'll find our website, all of our social media channels as well. And if you go into our website, we have a new merch store that we'd love you to go and have a look at what we've got. We have t-shirts, aprons, mugs. It's great. If you like us, we'd love you to get involved and also post pictures of anything you get from us. It'd be fantastic to see that. You can also get in contact with us if you've got any questions or anything. You can do it through the website or you can message us directly through our Instagram accounts. Finally, also, if you want to support us in a different way, we do have a buy us a coffee option on our website. If you'd like to donate something and any money that comes through that, we'll put straight back into the show. And until next time, keep on grilling.
Today's episode is brought to you by AOS Kitchens, the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.